Magic Mike, Side Effects, Haywire, quite a few other films. Soderbergh, as one of the two brothers, Mark, Mr. Channing Tatum. Scorsese, Ang Lee, Spike Jones, Michael Mann, David Fincher, the list is long. The elder brother, Mark Hoppe. And right in the center, director Ben Miller. Yeah. So Mark will be short, perhaps, Capote and Moneyball, but already extremely important in the cultural landscape worldwide, I'm afraid to say so. Sir, I'm just quoting someone saying this morning.
Merci, Henri.
My pleasure. First question here, and the second question there. The lady here.
Hello, hi, I'm Barry from the FB. First of all, congratulations on a really great film. My question is for Mr. Miller. Cam has seen quite a few films whose families are really unhappy. We've had Grace and Monaco, Grimaldi's are unhappy. We've had Welcome to New York. And I was wondering if the DuPont family have been in touch with you guys. And secondly, my question for Mr. Tatum and Mr. Butler. Just wondering how you prepared for the role. It's quite a physical one. Thanks.
Okay, one step at a time. Let's deal with that for our office.
We had a little bit of contact with some members of the family before shooting, but no contact since.
Okay.
Yeah. So we prepared pretty intensely. I think we wrestled for about 6 months, 5 to 6 months before. And I think Mark and I both have cauliflower ear as take-home presents from it, and bad knees. So it was definitely something that kind of gets into your body and doesn't leave in a good way.
That's true. We wrestled a lot with some real world class wrestlers, and we got to spend some time with the family and friends of the Schultzes, and really Bennett asked us to really immerse ourselves in that world, and so our life became wrestling, eating, sleeping, and sort of finding out about who these people were that we were playing.
Yeah, I got to actually spend time with Mark, the real Mark Schultz, so that was pretty special.
Well, that actually is pretty one of the questions. Your character died, so obviously he could not be on the set, thank you very much. Yours was on the set. Mm-hmm. How difficult is it to have the real character that you're portraying be on the set as often as he probably was, and maybe coaching you? I don't know.
He definitely coached me early in the movie as far as wrestling-wise, and then when he was on set, it was such a polarizing thing. At times, I was so thankful and grateful that he was there, and at other times, I was completely just terrified and I don't want to say distracted, but I think when you're literally looking off camera and the person that you're playing is there, it can be.
He was only there for a couple of days, and Channing, I said, Channing, are you okay with this? And he's like, yeah. And I noticed him struggling a little bit, and Channing would never say, listen, man, I can't, I mean, I love him, but I just wouldn't say that. But I talked to Mark and Schultz and said, I think Channing just needs a little bit of space right now. and he gave it to us.
Yeah. He's such a sweet man.
Yeah, it was, thank you. It was having Mark there was emotionally also very intense, because he was sort of reliving a difficult time for him. And so I think it was as hard on him too as it was on all of us, because you know, you go through a bad time in your life once, and then you have to go through it again on a movie set. It's a little heavy.
Yeah.
In a way, then, Mr. Carell, you had the freest hand of all. I'm assuming you never met the real John?
No, I didn't.
So you have were totally responsible for your creation with the director, of course.
Well, I think there was a responsibility to the participants. So I felt like there was, you know, free hand to a certain degree, but I watched as much as I could. I read as much as I could about him and tried to gain a semblance as to the type of person he was. But yeah, he wasn't sitting off camera watching me portray him, so I didn't have that looming over my shoulder, no.
I just wanted to speak quickly to my preparation with the family and the friends. Very early on, I met one of Dave's closest friends who was living on Foxcatcher with him for 6 years. And he really became my sort of guide and technical advisor. And we also became very friendly with Nancy Schultz and her children. And we were all sort of exploring the whole time, this 7 months of preparation with these people. And Bennett was inviting us to bring in stories and sort of reflections or epiphanies about these people as it related to the story as well. And so we were sort of on an investigative journalism sort of approach to telling the story. I felt that a lot of times as well.
And everyone was so giving and open, and everyone wanted to just express and explain their feelings pre and post after everything that happened. And it was a once in a lifetime experience for myself. So I thank you for letting me be a part of it. I can't imagine what it was like for Mark either, having, you know, I'm sorry, for Steve, having Nancy and the family around as he's playing this part too. So
do you remember the day when you met Nancy for the first time?
I did. I was, and I didn't meet her as myself. I met her in character, which was doubly awkward because, you know, they tried to make me look as much like DuPont as I could, and it was incredibly emotional, obviously. And she's a remarkable woman, and as Channing said, very, very giving and very understanding of what we were trying to do and the dignity we were trying to afford her, and that she just had intrinsically. So, it was sort of an overwhelming experience for me as well to meet her, to talk with her. It was much better to talk with her later when I wasn't in character and get a chance to sit down and reflect with her.
Question over there, then over here.
Hi, I'm Harlan Jacobson from the Philadelphia Inquirer. I'm curious about the degree to which you filmed out in DuPont country, including Newtown Square, and how your location guys found you, places to stand in for the DuPont estate. And also, I'd like to direct a question to Steve Carell, which is that you said you studied and read about John DuPont. Can you perhaps expand a little bit more on that, how you interpreted the dominant sort of conflicts within John DuPont himself that you had to express in the role?
I wanted to shoot in DuPont country, Newtown Square, on the main line outside Philadelphia, but circumstances pushed us a little bit west towards the Pittsburgh area, and we had some very, very excellent locations people, and Jess Gonshore, our production manager, who I've worked with on Capote and Moneyball and before that on other things, were just brilliant at recreating. But we did get lucky that another family, and I'm not permitted to say which, but a DuPont kind of a DuPont type family in terms of their history and wealth. What's that? Invited us onto their 17,000 acre estate and horse ranch, which, you know, had an amazing resemblance to Foxcatcher Farms. And they had never permitted any outsiders to even photograph it before. But, you know, I met with them. Amazingly, we got a meeting and I sat around a table with characters that could have been in the movie and told them what we were trying to do and asked for their support. And they'd all seen Moneyball now several times. And they said, yeah, we'd love to have you do this. And it was the most inexpensive location on the movie and one that money could not have bought.
Oh, and to speak to your question, there's a lot written about John DuPont and his family, and obviously the history of the DuPont legacy. So I did as much research as I could just based on that, based on his forefathers. But beyond that, there's actually quite a bit of video footage on him, some of which he shot for himself. He commissioned documentaries about himself and his life and his interests. So that was kind of a treasure trove to be able to watch those. And beyond that, you know, you get different interpretations of who he was or might have been, and you kind of have to just decide on one or a conglomeration of many. And it's, you know, it's difficult to say exactly what motivated him, bless you, and what, you know, what demons he had lurking inside of him. But I think, you know, with Bennett and with the rest of the cast, we were able to just sort of decide kind of internally what this character's motivation was and what his demons might have been. I'm sorry if that's vague.
Question here, then here, then here. Go ahead.
Peter Hall from Toronto Star in Canada. Congratulations to you all. I was really struck by the sound design of this movie and how you use silence so effectively. And also there's the effect of the cacophony, like in the helicopter scene. Obviously deliberate and really interesting. And I wanted to hear from Ben and Miller about that. And also maybe the actors could describe how that affected your role. So how you presented that. Thanks.
Well, the sound. I think that the style of this film and my other films is not so much telling a story, but observing a story. And I try to create a context that will sensitize you to what's happening beneath the story. Because there's a lot of American male repressed non-communication happening in this film, and there's a undercurrent, you know, beneath the undercurrent, and every scene is just a tip of the iceberg. And so the sound is one component that attempts to sensitize you. And you know, sometimes it pulls back as a means to, you know, pull you in, and hopefully it makes you look and listen and see what, you know, otherwise you might not have. But also it's, you know, it's an adventure, the film, really Mark's adventure. And it is a tour through these, you know, moods and temperatures and colors and you know, I think sound, thank you for acknowledging our efforts. It's I think one of the most underappreciated and often unexploited art form within, you know, the many art forms that make up film. So thank you.
Bennett actually would give, I would ask him to give me a song that he would want me to listen to for the scene that, you know, obviously wasn't going to be played in the scene, but he would give me something. Most of the time, it was not what I was thinking it was going to be. And I don't know if he was just doing that to throw me or what, but it was an interesting way to go about kind of finding different ways in to try and get whatever I'm trying to get across. And he's just obsessive about behavior and like his environment. You know, if there's ducks that won't shut up in the background, he like loves it for some reason. Like, he just, I don't know why, he loves the weird sounds.
They weren't ducks, they were geese.
The geese.
It's very different than ducks. Duck honking is the sound of madness. That's so funny.
That says it all.
It's a whole movie right there.
Hi, good morning, Chaz Ebert. Bennett, you have directed another movie, Capote, where the actor completely disappeared, just like with Steve Carell in this movie. And I wanted to know what that process is like, because both with your direction of Philip Seymour Hoffman and Capote, and in this movie, they seem to really be inhabiting the person, not just acting. And I wanted to know from Steve Carell, besides the physicality of it, what was the psychology of the acting? And I also have a question for John Killick, whom I watched over the years as a producer, and I think he makes very good choices, and so I'd like to hear from him as well.
Okay, shall we start with the producers? Otherwise, you won't hear the sound of the voices. Go ahead, John.
Thank you, Chaz. And I think one thing that Megan and I both share is supporting great artists, great work. And as much as this film is anchored in reality, you obviously can't overlook the style of Bennett and the signature of all these actors and what they bring to it. When Bennett first brought me the story and pitched it to me, I vaguely knew about it and hadn't researched it yet. But hearing it through his voice and knowing what the story would become in his hands was what brought me into it and what I'm so proud of. Thank you.
Megan?
I don't know. I think John said it pretty well.
Okay, about the actors now. Okay.
Robert.
Yes, okay, so second part is gone.
Chaz, I'm avoiding your question because it makes me emotional, you know. The last time I saw you, I was more emotional than I wanted to ever be in front of people. But to work with actors, who are willing. But all of these guys, and of course Phil, but to work with actors who are willing to, put faith in you. You have to be grateful for the rest of your life, you know. Steve obviously doesn't resemble anything he had done before, and tell you, as I'm sure he will too, it was so far outside of his comfort zone. But we met and we just talked about the character, and truthfully, I'd never seen Steve do anything that would give any material evidence that he could do this, but we just chatted and I heard how he thought and was thinking about the character. I had a vision for it working. I just thought he can do it and he will commit himself to doing it, and it might hurt, but it will get there. And I really cannot imagine anybody doing any of these roles except for these guys. And
from my perspective, the first time we met, Bennett described various scenes in the film as to how he envisioned them, and it's the first time I've ever experienced this, that the final product was exactly what he had described to me, and tonally it was exactly what he had described, and sometimes it was a very circuitous route to get there, but it was astonishing to me that all of, and this was years ago, and all of those components came together, and all of the people that were cast were exactly, you know, what, you know, was reflected on the page. In terms of how I approached it, you can do all sorts of research and listening to somebody's voice and watching them and trying to glean some sense of who they are. But I think ultimately you forget all about that when you start to shoot. And if you've rehearsed enough, it's inside of you as you're doing it. So it's not like, none of it felt like an acting exercise as we were going through it. None of it felt like we need to do something with this particular moment. It was a different experience altogether, and I credit Bennett with that.
And I credit the actors.
So, you know, we all credit the producers.
You know, something that Mark began to say before about meeting all of the people who had something to do with the story, and their journalistic work and studying what happened and being invited to bring that into the process, it really was an exploration. There were no real dots to connect specifically. We did not know where the dots were. You know, we knew the soul of the thing that was looking to be incarnated, but, you know, from day to day, we didn't know how that was going to happen. So the amount of research that these guys did and the ether of the place, which was the environment that was created with so many people who had, vital roles in this story, who were down there with us, caring about, the veracity of this story, and these guys, living it and breathing it, were invited to go off-road in quite a bit of the film. And I mean, I haven't done the math, but I'm going to say easily more than 50% was spontaneous. And another large chunk what came the night before or the morning of. And quite a bit was just stuff that they had learned along the way and were able to speak for these characters.
Well, Kevin? You want to telephone?
No.
Question over there.
Hi, good morning, Baz Vanilov. And wow, congratulations, it's a great movie and beautiful performances by all you guys. You're talking, Bennett, earlier about undercurrents, and one of the things I picked up was the decline of America, the moral decline. I just wonder if you could talk about that. I mean, it hit me quite powerfully. I know it's a family drama, but it's also about the decline of something else.
Right. Thank you, Bess. When I started learning about the story, it we see you, Roger. And you, Peggy. When I first heard about this story and learn the details of it, it was so bizarre. I mean, I had never personally encountered anything that resembled any of this behavior, much less wrestling or, such a patrician family or the cultures within. And what happened was so, bizarre and absurdist and sometimes comical and ultimately horrible. But I had never experienced any of that, and yet it felt very familiar, and that within this story there were themes that seemed much larger than the story. And because I really do care about these characters and this story, that's where the attention goes. But I can relate it to the world that we live in, our country. But I really, I do not want to like venture out and make a comment about it. It's not a political film. The film itself does not take a moral position, you know, so much as it's meant to be an investigation, you know, and an attempt to understand and feel some of these dynamics and, you know, towards this point of decline. I mean, it's just, it seems, yes, that's what's happening here, and that's, you know, what's happening on a larger scale too. And it's interesting to take a microscope and look at, you know, the interior of the genetics of this thing as it pertains to individuals. You know, one way of looking at the, you know, understanding the universe is through a microscope, and the other is through a telescope. And this is the microscopic attempt. But yeah.
You know, it did strike me at one point that there is, I feel like, a moral thrust of the story. Like there's a Greek tragedy buried in it, and in that it was, what happens when everything has a price tag on it, or what happens when everything is for sale? What happens to talent when it's for sale, or that it can be acquired by a price? And what happens to people when they're in a system that values almost everything at a price? And
modernity.
It's modernity. And so there's those moments that these people have, really, really, really talented people who can't really do what they do best in the world unless they can figure out a way how to monetize it. And but it costs them, and it costs their talent a great deal. And that was a theme that was, it's interesting today, and it's topical, and it's up for discussion. And the great thing about making movies and films is you can have that kind of discussion in a completely human and relatable way without it being political or polemic or divisive or blaming anybody. It's just like a reflection of how we are and where we are. And I really appreciate that that we got to do that with this movie and this story, and that you had your eye on that ball, as well as just being completely honest about what happened with these.
I think the first question, when, you know, I read the first article about the story, you know, these guys were down there with this guy who didn't know anything about wrestling, but he was the head coach of a team of guys who were some of the best in the world, certainly the best in the country. And the first question, I thought, just, you know, what's the transaction? What is the transaction? And how honest are they with each other about it? But yeah, by not kind of concluding anything, and I think we all love to just jump to a conclusion and take a side and good and bad, but by really staring at it in hopefully in an unflinching way, but to just keep looking at it. When you don't take a side, then you see past the thing that you're confronted with, and then you just keep looking at it and what's beyond it and what's beyond it. And so I don't know, maybe some people will take it as polemical in some way. It's not meant to be.
Question there. There is a gentleman from Belgium.
And yeah. Rogers, you know, we did it.
Go ahead.
Karen Batt from the Huffington Post. This is a question for Mr. Bennett. Mr. Miller, sorry. Your film is such a powerful and probing portrayal of vulnerability, and as you noted, in a masculine context in this case. And I was curious about your own interest and understanding of vulnerability in this film and in Capone as well, and the specific choices you make film-wise to make us feel it strongly. For example, using sets or close-ups, because this was what was very strong for me in the film. And a similar question to Channing Tatum is, what choices did you make as an actor physically or otherwise to make us feel this vulnerability of your character, which very much rivets us? Thank you.
Well, I guess I feel like we are all so vulnerable anyway, and it's just a question of how aware are we of it, you know. And I don't think that these characters are really aware of their vulnerability or what would come. And one recurring comment from the many people we talked to was nobody could imagine that this was going to happen, that it would end this way, or that the outcome of these ambitions would be so destructive. But you know, who we are and who we think we are and what we're doing and what we think we're doing are not always the same. And having the benefit of knowing what happened in this story and the effect that it would have, it's impossible not to look at these characters as having these vulnerabilities, because what happened happened. And I, you know, like Mark, see it as tragic, which is to say, it's not random. This is the trajectory of these characters' character. And I think the film attempts to see that, attempts to observe that. So I would say the same thing in Capote. It's, you know, the fault lies not within the stars, kind of thing.
Well, I had the sort of unique ability to be able to actually talk to Mark Schultz and spend some intimate time with him. And, you know, and that's always interesting, because obviously we're telling a story, and, you know, he has this entire life that we can't fit in 90 minutes or more, or a little more. You know, you obviously can take the physical things of the way someone walks or little small, like, eccentricities that he has in the way sort of that he thinks or whatnot. But I think one of the biggest lessons that I learned on this film, specifically we were talking about it last night, is, like, I think I came in with, like, a plan, like, this thing that I prepared, and I was really ready to, like, just, like, all right, first day, I'm on it. And after that first day, I felt like I ruined it. Like, I was just like, I didn't feel like I did anything right. And what I realized after it is that this isn't like a bar that I was gonna, like, jump up and hit, or like I wasn't gonna score any day. You just keep digging, and you just keep trying to find the truth in Mark and in the film, and what are we doing in each scene. A scene that is written perfectly, we'd get there and we'd do it, and we'd be like, something's missing. And we'd spend, you know, hours trying to figure out what is, you know, how can we find it and find the truth in it. And I think the thing is just, you know, you got to give yourself over to it and sort of just let it come through, you know, in all the different stages of what making a movie is. And I really trust in the person that's telling the story.
There's one character we haven't talked about, and that's Madame Dupont. Mm. Formidable Madame Dupont, played by the formidable Vanessa Redgrave. Was your take on Mrs. Dupont the same as Vanessa Redgrave's? And if not, which prevailed ultimately?
Well, it, again, it's not a polemical thing. We're not like opponents. Like there's no tug of war. It really was a sitting down and discussing, like, who is she? And who is she to him? And, you know, the fact of the facts that we knew that did include her dying shortly before the Olympics, and that was the beginning of DuPont's unwinding, and he did, you know, find himself marching down to the stable to release the horses, and she did have 32,000 ribbons and trophies from her horse, what would you call them, conquests, you know.
Collection.
I mean, she was a world class equestrian, and there's no doubt that John DuPont was, I think, attempting to, you know, compete with his stable of athletes, you know, as she was. But we really explored that thing, and there were probably, how many different scenes do you think we could have cut out of the improvs of that day?
She was an incredible improviser. I never knew what to expect at any given point opposite her.
Yeah, but I mean, she provided many possibilities for this character. You know, on the day, Roland. So I think we ended up being very harmonious with the process. I think these guys, like Chandler was saying, you know, could beat themselves up at the end of the day. But she seemed to just roll with it.
We'll take one last question. Quick, very quick question, very quick answer.
Very quick. Congratulations, very quickly. For Bennett Miller and Steve Carell, you explained your collaboration with Steve, but first of all, when did you have the idea to say, okay, this guy with this big sense of humor can do a movie like this? And Steve, well, you're afraid, you can't make a joke, you have to create completely something else. What about that? Thank you.
And we had lunch, and I just thought, oh, he could do it. That's how I felt. And we had one interesting talk in rehearsal about trying to understand DuPont, and I asked Steve if you could imagine what life would really be like if he did not have the relief of a sense of humor. Not just being funny, but to see humor in things, and what would that really be like? And do you remember what you said?
I don't remember my response.
That's because he fainted. I just saw you kind of go to a dark place, and I think all comedians are dark. And said, no, I cannot imagine it. Which
I think it's really the same approach you take to a comedy anyway. It's not, because I don't think characters in films know that they're in a comedy or a drama. I think they're just characters in films. So, I think the same applied to this. I don't think I didn't approach it as a drama necessarily. It was just a story and a character within that story.
I'm afraid our time is up. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.